want the Republicans to wake up is... The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to. Do it live!
Now, from the Left Coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thanks for downloading the very latest in-depth interview podcast from here at peterbcollins.com. In a moment, Jason Leopold will join me, the intrepid investigative reporter whose coverage is on many fronts these days, and we'll focus primarily on the admission from CIA Director John Brennan that his people did spy on Senate intelligence staff members. First, I want to thank the people who make this program possible with your subscriptions. Folks like Michael Petty, who just took out a new subscription, Multitask Man, Andy Rush, and Marianne Razzo. I invite you to join them. Come on over to peterbcollins.com and follow the link under my picture that says sign up. You can choose $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever fits your budget. And our new annual subscribers who pay $50 a year, that's our best deal, qualify for bonus gifts like this rock and roll CD by John Dist called Red Flag. And while it lasts, I'll send you a bag of kick-ass Kona coffee beans supplied by our friend Russ Archibald on the Big Island of Hawaii. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting my work. Jason Leopold returns to our podcast today. He don't take no for an answer. That's some 80s punk from the Tom Robinson Band. And I'll bet Jason's got a t-shirt from TRB. Am I right, Jason?
I have to check on that one. Wait. Actually, you know what? I have a Utopia t-shirt.
All right.
So I think that's sort of, yeah, I get credit for that, I think.
Okay, we'll give you that. And yeah. Jason is resplendent in a Jane's Addiction t-shirt. I can see him on Skype, but you can't.
Yes.
And Jason, you have been so busy publishing at Vice, at Al Jazeera America, and many of the fronts that you cover are really bursting with news these days.
Yeah.
So let me start as we speak here on the last day of July. John Brennan, the director of the CIA, has formally apologized to the chairs, co-chairs of the Senate Intelligence Committee for the allegations that he made back in March that the staffers of the Senate had improperly accessed computers controlled by the CIA. And this is all, of course, in the preparation of this long-withheld 6,000-page report on detention, interrogation, and rendition. And tell me what your reaction was to John Brennan's about-face, because he was very strident back in March, accusing the Senate staffers of crimes, and now he is eating those words.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. Let me just say that, I chose this T-shirt today, Peter. I was wondering what's going to happen, and it's the Jane's Addiction Nothing Shocking album T-shirt that I'm wearing. The apology itself is a surprise, is somewhat of a shock. The allegations, the Inspector General's findings that they, you know, that the CIA essentially spied on the Senate, that's not, you know, back in March, John Brennan was so vocal about what the CIA did not do and how the Senate was just, exaggerating these claims that they were spying, that their computers were hacked. I actually think, Peter, that John Brennan was under the impression that when the Inspector General looked into this, that they would essentially side with, you know, the CIA and, you know, say that there's no evidence of it. So because I think Brennan is that type of, you know, has that type of vision, has that sort of understanding, you know, that the CIA doesn't you know, find wrongdoing about its own, and certainly nothing that would, you know, that would be made public. So the news that this came out today is, you know, again, it's not a surprise. What's really a surprise is that is the apology that took place and the real public shaming of John Brennan. You know, it's worth noting, however, that the White House, typical White House is, we stand behind John Brennan. we think that he's doing a great job. In fact, you know, he's the one who even called for the Inspector General's investigation. You know, let me just point out that the issues revolving around torture, which is why, you know, these accusations revolve around, the Senate's review of the CIA's torture program. You know, the Inspector General did internal reports back in 2008, 2009, and earlier, and you know, those stayed, you know, within, you know, the agency. The Counterterrorism Center did their own reviews, so we never actually found out what was happening. I mean, what I was really struck by this afternoon, and I posted this along with my story, is that they've already released a summary of the Inspector General's report. So there's a bit of an about face over at the CIA, and I think that based on the fact that they have been working full time for the past 2 years, expecting at least the executive summary of the Senate's investigation or review to come out, and doing everything that they can to figure out how to attack that report. This is a big game changer, where you know, it all depends on what this so-called accountability board that Brennan is now commissioning. How funny is that? You know?
Yeah, he's taking a page from the president, who investigated himself with a group of friends about domestic surveillance. And apparently Lee Hamilton declined or was unavailable. And so they chose another centrist Democrat from Indiana who can be relied upon to deliver what he's asked to do. And that's Evan Bayh, former senator.
Yeah, you know, it's... again, should people expect anything to come out of that? Accountability? No, because we haven't seen any accountability whatsoever in more than 13 years. Certainly no accountability within the CIA, that's for sure.
And Jason, you know, we have to zoom out for a moment here and look at the big picture, because despite the momentary embarrassment of Director Brennan in having to acknowledge that he was wrong, I would assert that he misled us. It's not clear that he flat out lied, but I think that's a fair accusation to make. The bigger issue here is that John Brennan has allowed his buddy and predecessor as CIA director, George Tenet, and others, including Kofor Black, who was involved deeply in the creation of the black sites, the torture protocols, the rendition program before he went to work for Blackwater, those and others who are, you know, listed in this so-called review and whose work is criticized, are being permitted to suggest the deletions,
redaction.
Yes, redaction. Thank you.
Yes.
So the redaction team is comprised of the suspects who are covered in this so-called review.
Right. Yes. And that's it right there. And you know, even the fact that you know they're putting together this panel, or rather this group of former CIA directors to respond to this report, all of whom have been, you know, involved in it. I mean, I think that what's really important to note here is that the head of the Counterterrorism Center right now, about a week ago, you know, he said that under his watch, under his command, he has more than 200, you know, CIA officers who are involved with the, you know, rendition program. Obviously, more people, you know, the CIA employs more than that. But when it comes down to it, you know, it's there's, you know, too much of an incestuous relationship and, you know, between these various officials, you know, to think that anything is going to come from, you know, such an internal review is far-fetched. However, let me just say that I'm very happy that my colleague Ryan Shapiro and I, just a few weeks back, actually a month ago, we filed a FOIA lawsuit, Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the CIA, asking the agency for pretty much every record it has revolving around its spying on the Senate. And the news today, Peter, absolutely confirms that they have a lot of material, you know, many, many records. And I expect there to be a fight, a fierce battle between, you know, my attorney and the CIA, or rather, you know, the Justice Department, to get those records, which will shed additional light on exactly, you know, what was happening. And so, you know, we'll see. But I do want to make this point, and I think that in the context of spying, which we've heard about over the past year with Edward Snowden, with these documents that have been, you know, trickling out, with regard to the NSA's activities, and the fact that Dianne Feinstein, who is the chairwoman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, who is the woman who made, the senator who made the delivered this extraordinary floor statement, 45-minute floor statement back in March, in which she accused the CIA of spying. And at the time, she said that did the CIA's search of Senate computers violate the Fourth Amendment, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, and Executive Order 12333, which prohibits the CIA from conducting domestic searches or surveillance? And the Inspector General, in the unclassified summary of the report I obtained, says that you know, the, you know, potential violations here are violation of the Wiretap Act and Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. So, a couple of things. One, it's ironic that Dianne Feinstein is talking about Executive Order 12333, which is you know, what all intelligence agencies use to, you know, collect foreign intelligence and or communications, including Americans, and it's been exploited. And yet she doesn't want to do anything about that. Or look into that, but, you know, obviously very concerned because it pertains to her, you know, oversight duties. So that's, you know, when she's screaming about it. And the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, that's you know, that's really interesting, and it'll be interesting if anyone is actually found you know, guilty of that, or if someone has actually, you know, violated that law, because that's the same one that's been used to essentially prosecute all these hackers. And prosecute Aaron Swartz, the late Aaron Swartz, internet activist who you know, took his own life. So it would be stunning to see, you know, someone at the CIA actually, you know, prosecuted for you know, for violating that.
Now, Jason, this tug of war between essentially Feinstein and Brennan, to personalize it, has been, from what we know, triggered by the so-called Panetta review. When Leon Panetta was director of the CIA, we have discovered to some extent that he conducted his own review of torture, rendition, and detention. Does your lawsuit specifically request that? And what do you think the odds are that we'll ever see the Panetta review?
That's actually a separate FOIA lawsuit, Peter.
How do you keep track of all these?
Yeah, that's another Freedom of Information Act lawsuit I have. I actually have, I have a separate lawsuit for the Panetta Review. And back in June, the government attorney had, you know, they were supposed to turn over whatever documents they could turn over. But they asked for an extension. The reason they said that they needed this is because the, you know, their focus was on the Senate or declassifying the executive summary of the Senate 6,600-page Senate report. So now they're due to turn over whatever they can turn over by the end of August. And I don't expect them to, you know, turn over anything substantive. I always go into, you know, FOIAs when it comes down to trying to obtain documents through FOIA, you know, I assume I'm going to have to go through a very lengthy appeals process and fight for it. So I expect the same thing here. But it's very clear to me that those documents exist, that there are documents, you know, characterized as a Panetta review. And the CIA and the government have basically indicated in my lawsuit that they know exactly what we're talking about, and they are going to process those records. But they can certainly say that we can't release anything because it's classified.
Mm-hmm. They'll go Glomar on you.
Yeah, well, that'll just mean that we have to dig our heels in for a fight. But let's go back just very quickly to the Bush years and note that when the ACLU fought the Bush administration in federal court to obtain many of these records, which provided us with this great insight into what this torture program looked like and the policy of torture. You know, they were successful. I mean, it was a fight, but they still obtained more than 100,000 documents. So I'm very confident in my attorney Jeff Light, who I think will be able to pry some of this information loose. But you know, as you noted, yeah, that was sort of the spark that ultimately led to the hacking charges, the surveillance charges, from senators that their staffers were being looked at, or their computers were being monitored, and in the unclassified summary today from the Inspector General, it says that five agency employees, two attorneys, and three information technology staff members improperly accessed the shared drives that they had,
mm-hmm.
hard drives.
Now, Jason, one more bite on this little apple. Eric Holder is embarrassed today because he already closed the file. Both the Senate Intelligence Committee and the CIA asked the Justice Department to investigate and prosecute, and he threw up his hands about 2-3 weeks ago and said, we couldn't find anything, never mind. With this IG report and Brennan's apology, will Holder revisit this?
The Justice Department is not saying anything about that. And it's another tidbit of info here is that the Inspector General completed their investigation on July 18th. That's what this unclassified summary states. And Holder, or rather the Justice Department, ended their investigation, or rather said that there's not enough evidence to investigate on July 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I have a feeling that they were communicating with each other.
Do you?
And I really believe that to be the case. And because the fact that the Justice Department, less than 2 weeks before the IG report pretty much wrapped up, saying this, I think that, look, they wouldn't have had any other choice. If this report came out now, before DOJ made a decision, they certainly would have to move forward, right? They'd have to investigate. So, I think there'll be pressure. There's certainly going to be pressure from Udall and Ron Wyden in the Senate to put pressure on the Justice Department to investigate. I mean, they're not holding back. These senators are really, really upset about this. and they're certainly not. They've accepted the apology, but they're not saying that's it. Feinstein's another story. You know, she's said I've accepted the apology, and you know, let's see what happens next. She was one of John Brennan's biggest, you know, supporters, champions, and don't expect too much from her.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jason, one of the people who is likely to figure in this CIA report on torture and rendition is a man whom you have profiled in great detail, Abu Zubaydah. And remarkably, a week or so ago, a European court awarded money damages to Abu Zubaydah to be paid by the government of Poland. And I find all this fascinating and weird because Poland permitted the United States to operate a black site at one of its remote military locations. And the U.S. was not fingered in this EU decision in any way that I saw. They didn't order the United States to pay money damages to Abu Zubaydah. And the court record there is pretty clear that he was illegally detained. He was tortured. And that as a result, he is owed money by the United States. By Poland.
Right.
Tell me what you make of that decision, and will he ever see a dime?
I actually think that he will likely see something. But the government of Poland obviously does have an opportunity to appeal this. But the record is set that Poland did allow a black site to operate. The European Court of Human Rights noted that Poland had consistently more or less thwarted this case, refused to share evidence, claimed that they were doing their own investigation. They really weren't. So, in that environment in Europe and in holding these other countries accountable, it's significant for what it says that Poland essentially violated international laws, human rights laws, by allowing this to happen, and it does essentially. Show some accountability in the sense that with regard to more than 50 countries that worked with the CIA to either establish black sites, allow their airspace to be used. This is the first time that a country is being held accountable for allowing this to happen. So it's significant, but in terms of how is it binding? I mean, Poland doesn't have to pay anything. I do think that they'll try to do something here, but I think that what's the parallel issue about this? What's important is that in the same court they also found that. The alleged bomber of the USS Cole, Abdin al-Rahim al-Nashiri, that he too was tortured in Poland. And really what that is, the impact of that on his military commission. Now that's a different story because he faces the death penalty. And here you have, a court, the European Court of Human Rights, that says that he was brutally tortured, and that this country allowed it. I think that that could really have an impact on his military commissions, and will hurt the government's case. It will certainly hurt the ability for the government to obtain. If he's found guilty, put him to death. Mm-hmm. So all of this, and even the CIA report, even the Senate report, Peter, this will really impact the military commission. So There will be a bit of a domino effect here.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that you are going to see additional cases brought before the European Court of Human Rights.
Mm-hmm. Jason, one of the other threads that's already been tugged on a little bit here is the use of the British island of Diego Garcia, which the U.S. has been leasing since the 1970s, as a transit point and as a black site. Now, the U.S. has long denied that that has occurred. Then there's been an admission from the British government, oh, maybe a plane refueled there, but they never let the detainees off the plane. Well, Andy Worthington, our friend and colleague, the British journalist, has done a great job in a recent report. There was a British official who was carrying a stack of papers, and a well-placed photographer with a really good lens got a shot of it, and it shows that there are documents that contradict the assertions of Britain and the United States related to Diego Garcia. Have you picked up any more on that particular thread?
I haven't. I mean, it's certainly not in terms of being able to publish additional stories. I mean, what I reported for Al Jazeera America back in April, I believe it was, perhaps May, about the use of Diego Garcia, about the fact that it was operated with the full cooperation of the British government, and the impact of that story, because it didn't focus on Diego Garcia. I just happened to mention that that was one of the findings, rather, of the Senate's report.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, did it really cause quite a firestorm in the UK? Was mentioned in Parliament. It was questions that were raised, and I know that diplomats had contacted their counterparts in the U.S. that the White House got in touch with the Senate Intelligence Committee. Now, what I can say, and I'll probably be breaking a bit of news here, is that this was based on sources who have read the report, and I believe I identified them as U.S. officials, there are a number of countries I found out, and Diego Garcia may be one of them, that are going to basically be erased entirely from the report. So the executive summary of this report that's supposed to be released publicly certainly doesn't mention any countries. But I'm told that the actual 6,600-page report, after intense lobbying by various diplomats and high-ranking government officials, that the identities of these countries will just, be erased. Will not even be included, and that's the big problem. Is that will we ever see that report? Will that ever happen? Will we ever learn more? About the role of that these other countries played. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting with regard to the documents on Diego Garcia. After I reported the story, these questions were being asked, that the UK then or reports came out in the UK that some of these documents were damaged, water damage documents on Diego Garcia. So there's kind of some weird things happening, but specifically focusing on that, if you go back to the Bush years. I did look at some State Department talking points about Diego Garcia when that came up, and the statements that they made were based on, quote, assurances from the U.S. Now, let's hypothetically say they were completely in the dark about all this, and they were, relying on assurances from the U.S. Well, I think it's pretty clear, Peter, that our government officials have lied, misled, not told the truth, kept information, or concealed information from others. But with something like Diego Garcia, I think that officials in the UK would have been well aware and would have authorized that.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope to continue reporting on that, as well as some of these you know, some of the other countries. I mean, I can tell you that in the executive summary, what you will see with regard to where they were being held, it will not say Poland. It will identify the countries as country A, country B, country C. And so it will be left up to journalists and human rights researchers to try and connect those dots and basically, you know, identify what country A is.
What an insulting game for them to play with us at this late stage.
Yeah.
And Jason, today The Guardian published a story originating from the Associated Press, which has a little more information from this hopefully forthcoming report. And the information is mostly spun up to try to minimize Colin Powell's personal responsibility for these programs. But I'm going to leave that aside, because what I think is fascinating is that the information was gleaned from talking points that have already been written. It's what I call prefab spin for the State Department spokesmouth. And they're already rehearsing these lines. Let me read this to you. This report tells a story of which no American is proud. But it is also part of another story of which we can be proud. America's democratic system worked just as it was designed to work, in bringing an end to actions inconsistent with our democratic values. Now, this is such a load of bullshit. And to imagine that they're saying that the system has worked when not a single person has been indicted or in any meaningful way been held accountable. And John Kiriakou, the CIA officer who attempted to whistleblow on torture practices, is the only person in prison for anything remotely related to the torture program. And so this prefab spin, I think, gives people a flavor of how the government is going to try to push this into the past and move forward as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. And, you know, keep in mind that this is with the full cooperation of the White House.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they're of course they're going to spin it, you know, and it's great that these talking points are out there. So, you know, it's unfortunate that the talking points actually don't include the answers, because some talking points do. They provide, you know, what the actual statement should be. I just don't think they got around to, you know, to finishing it yet. So, you know, that exists someplace. But yes, I mean, you know, the fact that they're looking at this as some sort of accountability. You know, it's great that the Senate, and important that the Senate, undertook this very, very, very expensive investigation. But I hope people are not fooled into thinking that it amounts to any sort of accountability, because Dianne Feinstein herself made an agreement with former CIA Director Leon Panetta that this would not be the type of investigation that would result, or the type of review that would result in any sort of criminal charges or prosecution or anything like that. So there is no real accountability. It's simply, we're putting this out there to show, look, this is, you know, we're showing you what the CIA did. But then what?
Well, you know? I see it as a bright, shiny object to distract you from the obstruction of justice that it really represents.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I think that, again, you know, there'll be pressure. There will be pressure on various you know, government officials to look at it. But the Obama administration has no desire, will not allow something like that to take place. I mean, if the CIA is going to such lengths to thwart the release of the report, to undercut the report, to attack the integrity of the report, I mean, there's no way, you know, they're going to allow any sort of you know, investigation, and essentially, you know, our government officials acted with impunity.
And Jason, as we see the Republicans fumbling around with this lawsuit against the president, which is really just a substitute for impeachment, because The lawsuit polled better with Republican base voters than impeachment does, and impeachment brings its own share of headaches and issues. But I would submit that the president is impeachable for obstruction of justice in this very vein. And yet we know the Republicans will never touch that or attempt to pursue it because it would unravel their own cover-ups of Republican exposure and liability for this behavior. And that becomes the neat Washington package where it's self-canceling. Neither side can really pursue remedies because of their own exposure and complicity.
Yeah, I was just thinking, Peter, it's been, 13 years, and we're just getting to, a small sort of, piece of understanding what happened here. There aren't any names associated with any of this. I mean, that's sort of important. The woman who we've discussed many times, I believe at least, Alfreda Frances Bukowski.
Yeah, the redhead.
Mm-hmm. The redhead who was deeply involved in this program and made, you can call them mistakes or at least that's what the government will call them. She continues to enjoy a very powerful position within the CIA, despite all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that speaks volumes. Jason, there's so much work that you've been doing lately, and I'm not going to have time to cover it all today. But I do want to ask you to tip our listeners off to one of your latest Freedom of Information Act approaches. And this deals with the recently retired head of the NSA, Keith Alexander. And he appears to be on track to pull off the next Michael Chertoff play. And I'll explain that for people who don't remember Chertoff. He was a Homeland Security official in the Bush administration who left government to go into the private sector, where he joined a company that got the contract to manufacture and sell the full-body scanners to Homeland Security's Transportation Safety Administration, and it's just part of that revolving door. So tell us what Alexander's been busy with since he left the government and what you have FOIA'd.
Alexander's been basically busy essentially been busy selling his services, first charging about $1 million a month, to corporations, trying to help them prevent cyber attacks. And then that price dropped down to, $600,000. Now he's got a new firm called IronNet Security. Apparently he has come up with some patents that will help these banks and other institutions avoid these type of, cyber attacks. But I have been, and there have been questions about, is he selling classified information, essentially? He was the head of the NSA for 9 years, Peter.
And the Cyber Command.
And Cyber Command. And as Congressman Alan Grayson said, in a letter to the NSA, I mean, this is a guy who holds a lot of classified information inside of him, inside of his head. So he has all this classified info, and how can he work to assist these companies, these corporations, without essentially selling them classified information? And how can he do that? Because everything that he knows about what was what's taking place is essentially classified. So, and then there are questions about his finances that I've raised, which are, let me see your financial disclosure records, which every government officials are supposed to who are appointed by the president, executive appointments, are supposed to fill out, and unless the president provides them with a waiver. And the NSA refused to give me these financial disclosure forms. In fact, they were trying to say that I have to go through the FOIA process to get this. But under the Ethics and Government Act, you don't have to do that. You simply have to ask for it. They refused to give it to me. Finally, they sent me a letter saying, would not say whether he got a waiver from the president, but more or less alluded to that, that he got a waiver. And I'm interested, Peter, one, to see what his finances are. And what if Keith Alexander owns, half of Google? I have no idea.
Well, just to give you an example, Li Feng has done some great digging and recently reported that several judges on the FISA court own stock in telephone companies that they order to cough up our phone records on a quarterly basis. I mean, these conflicts are really rife.
Yeah. No, it's lots and lots of conflicts, and that's why I think it's very important to see these financial disclosure records.
Mm-hmm. Well, keep us posted on that. And Jason, I just want to acknowledge your recent reporting. You did a very interesting piece based on a letter from a hunger-striking prisoner at Guantanamo to the judge who has been presiding over these cases, Judge Gladys Kessler. I'll link to that in the show file for this podcast. You also did a very interesting profile of this State Department recent retiree, a guy named Tye, T-Y-E, who resigned from the State Department in April and is trying to blow the whistle without actually violating any of his classification agreements. And he's trying to sound the alarm about the Reagan-era executive order that you mentioned earlier, 12333, but he kind of sounds like Senator Ron Wyden did a year or two ago, saying, I really wish I could tell you how insidious these operations and activities are, but I can't. What was your takeaway from your interaction with Mr. Tye?
Good question, Peter. My takeaway was that he is, I believe that he really wants to see the government, change this, these policies that allows them to, to spy the way that they're spying. But I think he's really, really, really naive.
That was three reallys, just for the record.
Yeah, I really want to one more really want to emphasize that, and that's not to I'm not undercutting his his decisions and his efforts to expose this, but. He's not an intelligence, community employee. He's not part of the intelligence community. He worked at the State Department, and as a result of his work and these leaks by Snowden, he had to sort of get involved in understanding a bit more about the NSA programs. But he seems to be under the impression that you simply just go to Congress or raise red flags to the Inspector General, and that'll. That'll result in a change. And there's a long line of whistleblowers who've been prosecuted that will tell you that who have gone through, quote, proper channels, end quote, and have not found that to be the case. In fact, they've been prosecuted. So I think that he is somewhat misinformed to some extent about that. And it's hard for the public to sort of wrap their arms around what he's trying to say when all he's saying is, "Hey, this thing, and it's violating, it's constitutional violations." But I can't tell you anything. And you do have to respect that. I mean, he made an agreement. He has top secret clearance. Can't expect that someone to just violate that. He's going through the channels he feels is appropriate for him.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. He's basically offering himself up as a guinea pig who is trying to work through the system and follow the rules while blowing the whistle. And it'll be very interesting to see how the crackdown Obama administration responds to that.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Jason, I need to wrap up, but it's always great to talk with you. Thanks for all of the reporting you do on so many different fronts. And I appreciate, your contributions here.
Thanks, Peter.
Don't torture me, bro. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.